All right, good morning. We're going to get started. My name is Hope Hogan, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'll be the hearing officer for today's hearings. There's copies of the proposed rule changes up on the table here. There's only a few copies left, but if anybody wishes to have a copy, we do have a few available. This hearing is being called in case number 24957, which is a motion of the commission to consider adopting new rules and amendments to the general rules and regulations for the conservation of crude oil and natural gas, codified as Article 43-02 of the North Dakota Administrative Code. This hearing, as well as the other hearings held by the commission this week, will be streamed live and can be listened to via the Department of Mineral Resources Oil and Gas Division website. The Industrial Commission is required to adopt administrative rules in accordance with North Dakota Century Code Chapter 28-32. This administrative rules hearing is held pursuant to North Dakota Century Code Section 28-32-11. The purpose of this hearing is to ensure that the public has an opportunity to provide their comments and submit data, views, or arguments before administrative rules are adopted by the commission. It is important to the administrative rules process that the public's comments are received and considered. If anyone believes their ability to participate in this hearing is hampered by a disability of any kind, please let me know so that we can arrange the means for you to fully participate in this process. We'd ask that you keep in mind that this is an administrative rules hearing and it is not a legislative or court hearing. The purpose of the hearing is to get input from the public, especially those who have not yet had a chance to be heard concerning these rules, or those who have not or will not have an opportunity to submit written comments. This is not a question and answer session. The purpose of this hearing is not to pose questions to the commission staff about the proposed rule amendments, but an opportunity for the commission staff to receive input from you. We would ask today that you try not to repeat testimony of others, but rather refer to previous testimony that you might agree or disagree with. We do have an attendance sheet that we'll be passing around. We're going to ask that everybody sign that so that our record reflects all those who have attended this hearing today. Likewise, if you provide testimony or comments, we also have a sheet up here that we would ask that you sign as well so that we can have that information for our record for this case. Unfortunately, today we cannot accept telephonic testimony. And to make sure that the commission staff understands the comments you're providing today, they may ask questions following your testimony. So now I'm going to open the floor for testimony, and I'd ask anybody that wishes to testify to come up and sit at the table. And like I mentioned before, we are streaming this, so we'd ask that you speak close to the microphone so that we get that in our recording and via the internet. I'd also ask that you please state your name and address and the organization you are representing, if any.
Ed, in the highlighted section in your letter, I noticed that there are two separate year references, and it's been unclear to me why there would be two year references. Does each of them reference the GIS information in front of it? Well, there's actually 3 years there. There's 1996, 2007, and 2011. What do those relate to? Are they separate references to separate items? And maybe you could flesh that out for us.
You're correct. They are different of realizations or projections based on what the National Geodetic Survey has set forth as the new standard. So over time, these realizations or reference systems change based on more current or more accurate survey data. I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, it does. So the 1996 refers to the NAD 83. Those would be a pair?
Correct. Actually, those all do. they all refer to NAT 83, which is the current horizontal datum that is uniform across the country.
So how could there be two different year references to NAD 83? That's where my confusion comes in, is there's a 1996 and a 2011. Are those both? Yeah. Is it an either or?
they're separate realizations of NAD 83. And what I referred to earlier is that over time, because NGS is continually monitoring, updating, so they come out with new realizations over time as they acquire data. The reason that those are listed there is 96 is probably one of the more common ones that is used in North Dakota. And then as time goes on, you know, different survey companies may use a 96 realization where others may be with the more current 2011 or a 2007. So, yeah. And these changes are very minimal between those different datums.
So is it your opinion that any one of the three would be acceptable as long as it was clear that that was the one being used so it could be recreated?
Correct.
So any one of those three would be acceptable as long as we knew which one of the three it was.
Right. And that's the importance of stating that in the information is then anybody in the GIS field, when that's stated on the document, they know, okay, it's NAT 83, this projection, NAT 83, this projection, or whatever. So everything is, when they bring it into their data, then it's, or into their software, then it realizes to the correct location.
Ed, is there a certain accuracy that is accepted?
Yeah, there is. I wouldn't have those specifics, you know, what is the acceptable tolerances for those right here in front of me, and I don't know them right off the top of my head.
So. Ed, if you had a 1996 projection and you wanted to convert that to 2011, would you then have to convert it to the 2007 first and then to the 2011?
No. No,
okay.
You could do
okay, but there's been two different.
Those are in the software. You can set those parameters, what projection you want. So you get the data, okay, the latitude, the longitude, and then designate a specific reference or realization.
Okay. Yeah, is a more recent year more accurate?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you. And I'd ask that you sign the sheet there, too, okay, right in front of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Shelley Bench of Newtown. I'm a landowner, mineral owner, and farmer. The proposed amendment to NDAC 43.02.03.01 is unnecessary because interested end party already have definitions. I checked a Webster International Dictionary from the early 1900s and also a current one. The definitions have not changed. Interested means having an interest, concerned in a cause or in consequences, having a right or a share in. Party means one concerned or interested in an occurrence, one who takes part with others, having a concern or wish for something, a person. In Webster's International, there is a page which states, all state Supreme Courts defer to the authority of the International. And in May 1904, North Dakota Supreme Court wrote, in reference to Webster's International, our standard authority, the most complete and up-to-date dictionary in existence. By definition, it seems pretty clear that interested party includes more than property owners and managers. Why rewrite the dictionary that was good enough for the state Supreme Court? I also question what happened between February 2, 2016 and now. On that date at a landowner meeting, I asked Attorney General Wayne Stengem about the accuracy of reported flaring numbers. He didn't have an immediate answer, but Allison Ritter sought me out to try to explain the flaring calculations. I told her I did not agree with that or with other decisions made by the Industrial Commission. Her response was, then you comment, to which I replied that I do, but it doesn't make any difference. She assured me it does make a difference and implied all comments are welcomed. So why aren't they anymore? I don't know of any spill, toxin, or airborne VOC that knows to stop at the edge of one's property. They can and will have much more far-reaching effects. For example, why shouldn't everyone be able to comment on volatility of oil transported by rail since trains are exploding along their routes across the country and into Canada? Illegal dumpings or spills into Lake Sakakawea affects recreation, wildlife, and drinking water for more than just the landowner. Many landowners will allow anything to be placed on their land for money and feel no impact because they do not live on or near that parcel of land. To conclude, under the new amendment, I assume anything proposed on public lands or lands adjacent to it would then be open for everyone's comments as it is publicly owned. Likewise, anything proposed on private land could not be commented on by Lynn Helms or Ron Ness and the Petroleum Council staff since they would not be the landowner nor the managing company. I would like to believe that three state officials would not be willing to take a constitutional right away from the very people who elected them. Thank you for taking my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the staff?
Shelley, are you just representing yourself or is there a group?
Just myself.
Okay, thank you.
Shelley, I didn't quite catch the... I think the reference that you were talking from was the Webster's International Dictionary.
From the early 1900s.
From early 1900s, okay.
And their statement was from 1904.
I'm sorry, the statement from
statement
the Supreme
from
Court?
Statement from North Dakota Supreme Court.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want a copy of this?
If you have one, please. Yeah, we'll make sure it gets entered into the record. Yes, I'm going to have him stamp it as an exhibit. And then we'll take it. Do you have a couple minutes? Thank you.
Like to go next?
You don't have to be quiet just because we're in the library.
Morning. Morning. I'm Laura Erickson. I'm the Environmental Services Client Lead for Cardno Incorporated. Our address is 1007 24th Street West, Suite 2 in Williston. We are a global environmental and engineering services firm with a branch office here in Williston. We represent a number of oil and gas, special and solid waste management companies serving the local industry. We represent oil and gas exploration and production companies and responsible parties who work to remediate and to reclaim lands that have been adversely impacted by their operations. I've got a number of comments just to make about the proposed rules. Starting with just the definition section, I would recommend, I don't see it here, but just with some of the confusion that has that I've been hearing about regarding, say, saltwater handling facilities and some of the other facility references within the new or the proposed rules, I would recommend adding a definition for commercial disposal well. And I looked at some other code, Texas Railroad Commission code, and their definition of commercial disposal well means a well whose owner or operator receives compensation from others for the disposal of oil field fluids or oil and gas waste that are wholly or partially trucked or hauled to the well. And the primary business purpose for the well is to provide these services for compensation. I understand there's been a lot of comment on paragraph 25, interested party, and I was doing a little bit of research on that and would offer up just possibly an alternative, which may be affected party, meaning a person or entity who has suffered or will suffer actual injury or economic damage other than as a member of the general public or as a competitor, and includes surface owners of property on which the well is located and commission designated operators of wells located within, or maybe facilities located within 1/2 mile of the proposed site. That might be something that, you know, with that one term that could be lumped in with some of the other regulation, not to exclude, say, local governments who want to comment or, you know, provide some protest in some cases. All right. On page 4 of the proposed regulations, I would also suggest the addition of the phrase or term oil and gas waste, meaning waste arising out of or incidental to drilling for or producing of oil and gas. The term includes but is not limited to salt water, brine, sludge, drilling mud, and other liquid or semi-liquid waste material. Paragraph 45 on that same page, saltwater handling facility, has really created a lot of confusion for several of the folks that I've been speaking to. At first, I thought that this term was being presented here to sort of separate saltwater, the topside facility, from the downhole portion of the well, but that is not the case from some of my correspondence with you folks. So there just seems to be a little bit of clarification required there, and a clarification for one, whether this applies only to commercial facilities or to all operators. The second portion of that paragraph uses a term, deleterious substances, which I really don't like. I would like to see a more specific reference there, possibly to authorized Class II fluids, including non-hazardous E&P waste other than produced water. On page 7, at the bottom of the page, on paragraph 5, while there's no addition or revision to this particular code, I would recommend the inclusion or the addition of language for transfer of treating plants, because there's a form out on the NDIC website for transfer of treating plants, but it references this code, which is specific to wells. And I think there needs to be some framework around that process. Second paragraph on page 15, the phrase, when necessary to prevent pollution of the land, surface, and fresh waters, the director may require the site to be sloped and diked. Because there is a number of different portions of the code now that pertain to containment and diking of facilities, I'm wondering if this phrase is still appropriate in this place. So I don't know if it needs removal or if it needs just duplication across several sections of the code, because one of the terms in this sentence seems very important in light of some recent cases, and that's sloping. I think sloping of a well pad or facility can greatly help to prevent off-site runoff in the event of a spill. Safety regulation on page 16, second paragraph, last sentence, related to vegetation. I see that there was one phrase, or injection, that was added to this. I would recommend changing that sentence slightly to say all vegetation must be removed to a safe distance from site equipment and the surveyed pad boundary to eliminate a fire hazard. due to the number of occurrences of fires from flare, lightning incidents we've had, I think, you know, with North Dakota winds being what they are on occasion, that could really present a problem with perimeter vegetation particularly. On page 26, the third paragraph, regarding a data sharing plan between crude oil or produced water underground gathering pipeline owners and those, you know, whose facilities they may connect to. To me, this seems quite onerous. I don't necessarily have any specifics, and I'll probably provide, I'll think about this a little bit further and provide some more comment in writing. But it seems to me that immediate notification might be particularly onerous if a discrepancy occurs. A record of all data discrepancies shall be retained by the crude oil or produced water underground gathering pipeline owner. To me, this seems, I mean, there's good reason for reconciliation, I think, between facilities, especially disposal companies who are delivering to, operators who may be delivering to a disposal company or a treating plant. I can see the need for some kind of reconciliation process, but this seems to me to be a little onerous. So I'd like to talk to a few other clients, and I'll get you some specifics on what I think about that. Paragraph 11, spill response. Although I'm certainly not opposed to any kind of spill response plan, there are several spill response and emergency response plans that get written by many operators, SPCC plans, stormwater pollution prevention plans, emergency response plans. I think that probably the last half of this paragraph is a bit unreasonable. I think if we expect that every operator who will be installing a pipeline needs to consult case by case with the local emergency manager, we're going to overwhelm those individuals. So I would give some thought to making this regulation more systemic, possibly at the, you know, a plan at the field level, at the unit level, maybe at the operator level. And I think that might strengthen that a little bit and make it a little less onerous for operators as well as local emergency managers. Oh, the other thing I would just call out, and this kind of goes back to my first comment about saltwater handling facilities. This is on page 40, regarding the bonding. I mean, one of the confusing points here is, I mean, you consider a facility that maybe a treating plant with a co-located saltwater disposal that may have a pipeline relatively short, but could be up to a mile, maybe connecting to a secondary backup well, so to speak. I think that's where some of this confusion comes in, and I see now, because initially that was going to be one of my comments, that if you have a treating plant, is that considered, is that going to be kind of a duplicitous type of facility designation? So I think that paragraph 4 sort of clarifies that for me, but I would also say that there still needs to be a bit of a cleaning up and clarification of what you're intending the saltwater handling facility to mean. Mm-hmm. And that's the extent of my comments.
Questions from the staff?
Laura, do you have anything written or suggested on some of your proposed concerns here that you're going to submit to us?
I can, yep. Plan to.
Do you have anything today that you're going to present to us?
No, you don't want my book.
You talked about the saltwater handling facilities, and, well, let me I guess you were talking about the commercial disposal well definition, and you had a Texas definition. It sounded to me like if I was an operator and you are an operator and I was taking your water and I was disposing of my own but also charging you for yours, mm-hmm. that would be considered a commercial disposal. Is that your intent?
Yes.
Okay, because right now the commercial disposal would be I charge you, but I have no water of my own. That's my business is a commercial disposal. So it would be all-inclusive of many more disposal wells than is currently under the definition.
Yeah, I think the concern from some folks that I've been discussing this with has been, does this apply to a typical operator, a Continental, an Oasis, you know, Marathon, or is it, how do we distinguish really between, do their disposal facilities fall into that category? You know, so I think by clarifying what we want to call a commercial disposal well would be helpful in that regard.
Okay, and in your written comments, you will also address that in it?
Okay. I certainly can, yep.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Laura, you suggested that we add a definition of oil and gas waste. Mm-hmm. Did you provide a suggested place to go find one? Or I might have missed it when you told us.
A place to go find a definition?
Right. Is there a reference someplace
that
you like?
Oh, yes. Well, while I was reviewing the Texas Regulatory Commission or Railroad Commission code, this definition falls under the Texas Water Code, Chapter 27.
Texas Water Code, Chapter 27.
And there may be other regulation that is mm-hmm. better, but...
Well, it would be helpful to have a place to look. Mm-hmm. I'll ask my friend David Porter to send that to me. Under the safety regulation, you talked about removing vegetation to a safe distance from the exterior boundary of a pad or location. Is that how you referenced it?
Yeah, you know, safe distance, I think, is one of the other items that needs to be clarified. I mean, what truly is a safe distance? And I think we would probably want to review some of the case history from more recent spills. You know, I know some of those lightning incidents, and maybe Carolyn from McKinsey County could even comment on that. You know, you've got tank tops blowing up and, you know, landing in fields nearby, and, you know, potential situations where they just basically let it burn. Well, we don't want to have additional fuel for those fires, you know, right near the facility pads.
Okay. One reason that we sometimes use terms like that is that we have field inspectors and we allow them to work with the operator and make a judgment call on mm-hmm. what a safe distance is for that site and that vegetation, because there's an incredible variety of what can be safe and for one is not necessarily for another.
Sure.
On the pipeline section, paragraph 11, the spill response.
Yes.
And you specifically talked about emergency managers. Typically, there's one per county. So were you suggesting maybe that ought to be at a countywide level, that an operator just just have a plan for everything they have in that county and review it with that one emergency manager.
Well, I think the intent of this is to have a better response plan more at a local level. I think county might be too broad, because I think the intent is really to be able to adequately respond to the particular, hydrology issues, geology issues at a particular, in a particular area. So that's why I'm thinking possibly a field level or a unit level might be more appropriate.
Okay.
Laura, your comment on page 6, referring to treatment plant bond transfers.
Mm-hmm.
Is your comment based on the title of 43020315, or is it that you were commenting on you want to see language for transferring a treating plant? Is that what that comes from?
Yeah, well, I guess the title of that chapter or section would probably be in need of revision as well. Paragraph 5 is revised, or maybe there's language to include transfer of treating plants within this section.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my answer is yes on that one. But, yeah, I just think that we need a specific framework for the transfer of treating plants within the regulation. Or, I guess you could modify the transfer of wells and just have transfer of facilities. But that may require a bit more adjustment to certain pieces of the full regulation.
Okay. I was just confused because that subsection 6 does address transferring the liability of the bond to another bond that provides the same degree of security on page 8.
Is it covered in the pipeline bond thing too? Is there transfer?
Okay, possibly that. Possibly that covers it. But I was recently contacted about a facility transfer,
mm-hmm.
a treating plant transfer, and was trying to find, the code related to it, and was directed back to, by the instructions on the form,
okay.
back to this transfer of wells. And to me, it seems like it's just kind of the catch-all and maybe not specific enough to treating plants. So.
And then going to the pipeline rules on page 26, you mentioned data sharing. Are you aware the ERC study recommends that the DMR consider rulemaking that encourages real-time data sharing?
Mm-hmm. I think I want to reserve any further comment on that until I have a bit more time to talk to a few other folks.
Okay.
It seems to me to just be a bit onerous.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And one last thing I noticed when you mentioned, sorry, I'm kind of bouncing around, commercial disposal well.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial injection well is somewhat defined in the language in our underground injection control rules, that's 43020511. In that paragraph, it defines a commercial injection well as one that only receives fluids produced from wells operated by a person other than the principal on the bond.
Okay, so it is defined in the UIC section itself. Okay.
Within that paragraph.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't check that. But I still kind of think that we need to consider that commercial well designation in relation to the saltwater handling facility concept. Mm-hmm. And because I do know that there is just confusion over how that rule is intended, you know, who that rule is intended to apply.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Who would like to go next? Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Vanita Best, McKinsey County Commission. And the only comment I have is that McKinsey County's comments will be coming in written form prior to the close of our hearing. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Vanita, is the county commission going to submit comments or, I guess, or your emergency manager, or it's going to come from the commission?
I think what we're going to do, the plan right now is to collectively assess it,
okay.
Provide collective comments as it pertains to our different departments, and review those comments during our next meeting before we submit them.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to provide comments or testimony? All right. Pursuant to North Dakota Century Code 2832-12, the commission will have a written comment period during which data, views, or arguments concerning the proposed rules or any feedback regarding today's testimony or any of the testimony provided this week will be received by the commission and made part of the rulemaking record to be considered by the commission. All comments either provided in testimony or during the written comment period will be given serious consideration by the commission. All comments and correspondence must be received by the commission prior to 5 p.m. on Monday, April 25th, 2016, and will be made part of the record. Likewise, any comments we receive prior to the hearings will be made part of the record as well. Any comments received after 5 p.m. on Monday, April 25th, 2016, will not be part of the record and cannot be considered by the commission. So if you're wishing to provide comments, just make sure the commission receives them by 5 p.m. on April 25th. And that will conclude our hearing for today.
Thank you, everyone.